Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks for listening to the show that celebrates creating and stories. And also, hopefully, we wake up your imagination here on Art Zany. You know, I'm going to start off with a story. It was about a decade ago when I was teaching writing classes at the Loft Literary Center, and I participated in an open house to talk about my upcoming classes. And I led a group of writers in the Loft classroom in a creativity exercise. And this one is still one of my favorites. I'll give you the first start of the exercise. You first start, and again, this is a writing exercise, but we start with drawing. You draw a shape, and then you draw another shape near that first image. The next step is key. You connect the two shapes with a line. That becomes an object, but it's an object that only you can see. It's an object that has possibilities that you know, and it's something, it's definitely a something. You might look and think, I don't have any idea, but if you use your imagination a little bit, squint your eyes, you'll find something, and it's your job to see what's there, and this will definitely lead you somewhere. And the reason this week I was reminded of that experience came from this whole thing. I talked to you about it last week, of my email going wackadoodle. And after spending a couple days working on the problem, we finally got my email up and functioning. It's still not 100%, but I'm taking a break from that because I can't talk to any more tech people about it. It makes me frustrated. But I have had something positive come out of that experience, and it's super weird, and I'll share it with you, is that when I opened up my email, a message that had been sent to me from my dad in 2006 popped up on my screen. I mean, that is incredibly bizarre. That open house that I talked about had been written up in the Star Tribune newspaper by the columnist Stephen Wilbers, and my dad had forwarded me the copy of the article, and that came up when I opened my email after it had been, who knows what happened to it, but it was really weird. It felt like a sign, a little nudge maybe from my dad, maybe a little something from the universe that it's time to get back to the basics, start with just shapes and a line, and it's the beginning. You've got to remember that. That's how you begin, very simply. That's where you get to exploring your imagination, of course, discovering the joy of creating. And so for you, it might be two colored pencils, a clump of clay, a few keys on the piano, two steps on the dance floor, a couple of beads from your supply box. This is possible for everyone. It is your imagination, and you can access it. So I am so excited today to welcome back to Art Zany Radio someone who has inspired me in many, many ways. This feels like another sign that I need to connect again to my imagination in a way that lets me begin again with those lines and shapes. My guest today is artist, writer, teacher, creator, Danny Gregory, and he's going to talk about his new book, How to Draw Without Talent, and share stories about being creative and discovering the fun of making art. How to Draw Without Talent is for everyone. If you want to draw but you don't think you have talent, this book is for you. There is no experience or training required. And I can attest that Danny is a supportive teacher, a really clear writer, and just a delightful person to spend some time with. So I know that you're going to learn something about how to see again, how to enjoy the creative process. If you haven't heard our earlier interviews, Danny Gregory has written nearly a dozen internationally best-selling books on art and creativity. He's the co-founder of Sketchbook School, which has a K in that. So let me give that website to you. Sketch, S-K-E-T-C-H, book, B-O-O-K, school, S-K-O-O-L. So just remember that last part, .com. And it's a video-based art school designed to inspire creative storytelling through illustrated journaling. It's a delight. There's a lot of resources on that. And you can also visit DannyGregory.com to get more information. He has spent 3 decades working as a leading advertising creative director and created many award-winning campaigns. But now I think he spends his time full-time doing writing and illustrating illustrating and drawing and teaching. And his books have we've featured on the show, Shut Your Monkey, Art Before Breakfast. Also, we featured A Kiss Before You Go. And then he has a few others, Everyday Matters, An Illustrated Life, An Illustrated Journey, and The Creative License. So he does amazing things. So it is my pure pleasure to be able to bring to you today, Danny Gregory. Welcome to Art Zany Radio, Danny.
Hi there. It's great to talk to you again, Paula.
It's fantastic. I feel so excited when the email came through that you had a new book and we were going to connect. I was just thrilled. So thank you again for being here on Art Zany Radio. It's been a few years since we've chatted, and I'm really honored to have this conversation. So tell us, I think the last time we talked was about Art Before Breakfast. And that was a couple years ago, maybe 2015 or so. Tell us about your artistic journey since that time.
Well, the main focus of what I've been working on has been Sketchbook School. And Sketchbook School is just an opportunity for me, frankly, to meet artists and to meet people who have been drawing for a long time and have inspired me with their work, and also to meet new artists, people who are just starting out, and to talk to them about drawing and how to integrate that in their lives. And it's you know, I never really thought of myself as a teacher for a long time. I also didn't think of myself as an artist. So these are kind of terms that I struggled with, sort of feeling comfortable with accepting them. I think I was hesitant about feeling like I could be a teacher because I hadn't really gone to art school. I hadn't taken a lot of classes. I had sort of taught myself, but I realized that I had learned a lot from other artists, and those people had really been my teachers just by looking at what they do and sort of trying to emulate them and try to be inspired by them. I realized that that's kind of what I was doing for other people, so it became more sort of natural and comfortable for me.
I love that part, yeah, about your story.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, I think for I've met a lot of artists who have a similar sort of discomfort with the fact that they don't have a degree. And I think one of the things perhaps that's also changed for me is my son is 25 now.
Oh, wow.
And he went to the Rhode Island School of Design. So he went to, you know, arguably the best art school in America, and he got a degree. So I figured, well, you know, sort of by one degree of separation, I am now legitimized by the fact that at least I paid for his tuition to go to art school, and I sort of vicariously kind of saw what it was like to go to art school. So I sort of get that sense, and I feel like, okay, now I'm okay with what it is to be a teacher.
Well, and you certainly must have inspired him, which is, that says a lot, because a lot of times kids run the opposite direction of where you're taking your life and they want to do anything but that. So you must, that must have been quite thrilling to have a son who pursued art as a career and was interested in, you know, curious about what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have another artist in the house, you know, to be able to have a person who shares my enthusiasm. He works differently than I do, but I think that that's been great too, because we've sort of fed off each other and have learned a lot from each other. But yes, I agree. I mean, I'm so pleased that he didn't just become, I don't know, a tax attorney or something.
It could have happened. So that'll be fun to see where he takes his career. And I think that's absolutely perfect that he has a different process or a different way, because I think that's part of what you teach too, is that you're not teaching someone to draw like somebody else. You're helping them to learn how to draw like they should draw, like they understand the world or see the world. And that's, I think, one of the most exciting parts about what you do. And one thing that really surprised me as I was looking and learning about you for this interview was there was a quote, I think it might have been on your website, that you said, I spent most of my life not believing I had the right to consider myself an artist in any way. But then I started drawing about 15 years ago, and it changed my life. I'd always imagined that when you were working in the ad business and on ad campaigns that you were using your drawing skills there. But is that were you more in the different aspect of creating ads?
Yes, I was a copywriter.
Oh.
I've been a writer since I was little, and writing is the thing that I felt the most comfortable with. But it wasn't until I was, I think, 38 or 39 that I first allowed myself to come back to drawing. And I say come back to it because, like basically every other human being, I spent the years from sort of probably 2 until 6 or 7 being a dedicated artist and drawing all the time and making books and creating stories and doing all that kind of stuff. And I drifted away from it when I became a teenager, as a lot of people do. So then I came back to it in my late 30s, and I realized what had been missing from my life and my creative life was making drawings and making paintings and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, but I was always one of those guys who was doodling in meetings.
Mm.
And a lot of times in advertising, you're trying to communicate an idea, and I would sort of do a little drawing or a diagram or something like that to explain it. So I sort of did that. But in advertising, there are creative teams that are usually comprised of a writer and an art director, and the art director is usually in charge of the visuals. And I was not that guy. But even though I obviously couldn't help myself but contribute to that part of it, but that was not my official responsibility.
Well, that's an inspiring part of your story that I think a lot of people can relate to, because there are things that we do when we're younger that we, you know, fall in love with, but for whatever reason lose track or get separated or, you know, just don't feel like we can pursue that. And so that's a very inspiring part of your story. And I think that's why I think, and so it makes sense that in a lot of your books and your sketchbooks and your journaling, you use words within your images to tell stories or convey information or, you know, make a comment. And that was very appealing to me because I had never seen someone who was drawing doing that as well. And that appeals to me. So I think that it's very exciting to follow your journey and learn from you. You've been really instrumental, I think, in teaching a lot of people better creative habits. And that's one of the things that many of your books focus on. What have you learned over the years? And I think this book is probably a good illustration of some of the ways that you can better approach your sketchbook or a drawing book. And the book, again, is How to Draw Without Talent. Danny Gregory's my guest. We're talking about and it's brand new. I think it was just out a couple weeks ago. Is that right?
Yes, it just came out. It's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's so many confusions and misconceptions around art making, you know, and so many things that we think we're not allowed to do. And as we discussed, like feeling like you need to be trained as an artist is certainly one of them. But I think there's also this sense that if you want to draw, or you want to do watercoloring, or you want to just make art on a regular basis, it's kind of a big deal. Like you need to take a class or multiple classes. You need to go and buy a lot of art supplies. You need to take a weekend workshop. You need to, wait until you retire, or wait until your kids leave home so that you have big chunks of time to really focus on this and really get to know it and, you know, do all the things that you think you do when you study art, like drawing bowls of fruit and drawing skulls and drawing naked people and drawing cones and cubes and shading them, and all that stuff. You know, there's all these kind of cliches that we have about it. And now when I started drawing, I didn't have time for any of that. I mean, I had a job, I had a family. I started drawing when my son was a couple years old, so I had a baby to deal with. And I just didn't have a lot of spare time. I certainly didn't have time to take classes, nor the inclination, frankly, to do it. So what I started to do is to carry a sketchbook around with me because drawing was fun. And this is another thing that I think that we forget, but every five-year-old knows, which is you pick up a crayon and you start to draw, you know, a landscape of a house with a couple people standing outside of it and a tree and the sun and shining in the corner and some birds. That was just fun to do, and it can still be as much fun. It doesn't have to involve bowls of fruit and naked people. It can be just a thing that you just kind of do impulsively. And a lot of us may doodle in the corners of things, but why not just focus on that for 5 or 10 minutes? And if you focus on it and you try it out, you'll come away from it feeling refreshed. To me, it's very much like doing yoga, doing meditation, going for a run, all those kinds of things that we do to just clear our minds, to just take a step away from the craziness of our daily lives, from step away from our phones and the constant assault of content and media, and just to say, let me just spend a few minutes doing a little drawing. And initially, we're kind of overwhelmed by the quality issues. If I draw something, is it any good? And am I going to be making something that's embarrassing to me? If anybody else sees this, are they going to think that I'm pretending to be an artist? Or I think I'm going to draw something really great, and then it turns out to not be that great. And we are so afraid of doing something that's not good that we don't even allow ourselves to do it. And because we don't allow ourselves to do it, it may not be that good. It may be kind of something that looks like you drew when you were like a six-year-old drew it. You know, you do a drawing and you go, well, that looks like some, you know, preschooler did it. But if you think about it, you may not have drawn since you were in preschool. So you're kind of picking up from where you left off. So why would it be any better? But if you start spending some time doing it and you do it on a regular basis, day by day, you'll have more control. You'll have more confidence. You'll learn more how to express the things that you're seeing and feeling and thinking on a piece of paper, and it will be better. But even if it's not good, it's still fun. It still feels good. And my thought is doing a really good drawing is great and feels good, but doing a not so great, it's kind of like a candy bar. You know, it may not be the best candy bar in the world, but it's still a candy bar.
Sure, there's satisfaction. You
know? So, why not allow yourself to do it? And the drawings that you make don't have to be great. You don't have to show them to anybody else. And you can just do it in a sketchbook that you carry in your bag and you never show anybody. But you pull it out and you have this 5 minutes with yourself of doing this. And I was thinking about it when it comes to cooking and to other things that are skills that some people are great artists at. Like, there's certainly chefs who are great artists, but the fact is that most of us cook on a regular basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you might not be ready to open a 4-star restaurant, but you can make a grilled cheese sandwich. So if you can make a grilled cheese sandwich, what if you could make the grilled cheese sandwich of art? You know, that you can just do something that's just for you. Just fun, spend 5 minutes doing it, you eat it, you move on, you don't frame it, you don't share it with the world, you just kind of make it, consume it, go on. What if that could be drawing? And so that's kind of what I've done for almost 20 years now, is I've just made, I guess, basically a bunch of grilled cheese sandwiches and eventually published them into books.
And that, I think you hit on the key, is what's your motivation for doing that? And, you probably, it's a false pretense to start out thinking, well, this is, you know, I'm going to make a living at this, or I'm going to, you know, have my pictures in galleries. That if you start there, you'll never get anywhere. That you have to start, like your grilled cheese analogy, like this is just something comforting and enjoyable, and you don't have to show a single soul at all. And it's a little place where you can have a conversation with yourself and your imagination. And I think that, you know, that's one, the first exercise you ask people to do in How to Draw Without Talent is to write down why it is that you want to start drawing. And, you know, really think about that. What do you want to get out of it? And then, you know, allow yourself to understand those motivations, and I think, are you also trying to get us to recognize where you're beginning from, where your starting place is?
Yeah, I ask people on the very first page or two of the book, I say, draw something simple, like draw a hand. Draw your hand, you know. You may not have looked at your hand in this way, but just draw it, and take that drawing and put it aside. And then we're going to do a bunch of other things. And by the end of the book, at the very last page of the book, I ask you to draw your hand again. And you'll see how you have changed what it is, the way that you process. You'll see how you've changed how you see, the way that you notice details, the way that you render them. And you'll have a sense of accomplishment, because the changes that we make, it's not like you're going to sit down and in 5 minutes you're going to have some epiphany that changes you into an incredible artist. But you're going to make progress. Every day you'll make progress. Sometimes you'll slide back, and then you'll move ahead again. And I think drawing is, on one hand, a very familiar thing, because, again, we've all had this drawing experience, but it's also alien because we professionalized art so much, you know, and we think of artists as these others. They're famous, they're wealthy, their art is worth incredible amounts of money. A lot of it's incomprehensible to us as laymen. We don't really get it. So it's just different. And what I'm trying to do is say it's actually a pretty familiar thing, and you can make it familiar. But it is going to take, and it is comparable. You don't necessarily have to think of it just in terms of the art world and museums and galleries. You can think of it in terms of going to the gym, you know, and you can say to yourself, when I go to the gym, sometimes I have a great workout and sometimes I don't have that great of a workout, but going to the gym on a regular basis is good for me. Hopefully I kind of enjoy it and I have a reason for doing it, and I just keep making progress, and over time, I feel better about myself and I feel like I'm in better shape, you know? And so just try and think of it in those terms of something really kind of simple, like brushing your teeth or learning to drive. You know, there's some basic kind of little mini skills you learn, but really it becomes a habit. You just do it on a regular basis and try not to make it such a big deal. Try not to be super judgmental about it, but think of it as a pleasure. Think of it as a way to gain access to the world around you in with clarity.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that, is that I've been trying to develop a drawing habit for a while, and what I realized is that actually the only time I allow myself to draw is when I go on vacation, because that's when I find the time and the space, and I love doing it. It makes me very happy. I enjoy the little things that pop up on my page, and you know, so it's, but translating that back into the daily life is something that I still work on. And one of the things in this book that I really loved was the idea, and you mentioned the word a little earlier, it was confidence. And you have a line that you draw in early on in the book where you ask people to learn to confidently draw a line, and there's a comparison, and I have to pick up the book, folks, to see the difference, but it's really interesting if you think about, and it comes from, I suspect, people who say, there's no way I can draw because I can't even draw a straight line. And you have some really good advice for people, and there is a way to draw a line confidently, even if you have no talent.
It's true, and actually on that page, in the middle of the page, I have a drawing of a ruler.
Yeah.
Just remind people, if you want to draw a straight line, get a ruler. I mean, that's how I draw them too. But drawing a straight line has very little to do with drawing. That's not the point. But you know, I think I keep coming back to driving because I think driving is something that's familiar to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But driving is similar in that it is about seeing the road ahead of you, and it's about what you see in your eyes, how it goes through your brain, and how it comes down to your hands. So you're controlling the car that you're driving in. And I'm sure you remember when you first started to drive, when you were 16 or something, you probably didn't drive that confidently. You probably found it really hard to get the car to go exactly where you wanted. And, you know, your driving probably wasn't smooth. And similarly with drawing, a lot of times when I look at people who are just starting to draw, their line is very hesitant and shaggy.
Mm.
You know, kind of scritchy, scratchy, going back and forth, drawing the shaggy line. But when you write, you don't do that, right? So when you write letters, you're confident about them, and you draw them smoothly. You don't kind of shade them in. When you sign your name, it's a sweeping line. And similarly, when you draw, if you allow yourself to be confident, even if the line is incorrect, even if it's wonky in some way, as soon as you draw it in a straightforward way, it will look much more attractive. And if you think about a lot of cartoonists, right, that if you open the New Yorker, let's say, there's certain artists who...
Oh, Danny, are you there? Let's see. I think we might have lost Danny. He was just talking to us. It looks like it says call established. Yeah. Oh, there you are. You're back.
Yes, yeah, hi.
We missed a couple words there, so you were talking about...
Oh, okay.
Go ahead and continue.
Yeah, I was saying that when they're artists, cartoonists, who draw things that may not look like photographs, but the quality of their line, the signature, if you will, of their line is very confident. And so you can act as if you have confidence. You can draw as if you have confidence just by saying to yourself, I'm just going to draw this smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that may take a little bit of time, but it is something that is completely within everybody's grasp because, again, we know it from our handwriting. We know that we're capable of doing this. We're capable of drawing lines that are correct and smooth.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that in terms of my daughter is a gymnast, and one of the things her coaches is always talking about is that confidence that, you know, they say judges can see that confidence, and that will help your scores because, you know, they know that you feel you probably stand up a little straighter, you probably point your toes a little bit more, and you have, something that comes, it shows through, and it's appealing. So even if you don't think that, if you show that, it comes through. And so I think that's it's something a lot of people don't think about, and that's accessible to everybody. That does not have anything to do with what you've drawn before or what you're practicing or what classes you've taken or what teachers have told you. That is within you, and I think that's a really great place for everybody to start.
Yeah, I mean, one of the exercises that I give early in the book is a way of making lines that aren't representational. So you're not drawing anything particular. And it's fun to do because what you do is you put on some music and pick out several different songs and try drawing lines that express what you're hearing in the music. So, you know, just see where your hand goes. And your hand is going to respond to the music, you know, and sometimes it might be, you know, angular, sometimes it might be smooth and flowing. But by doing that, you start to feel more confidence in your line. You're not worrying about drawing a particular thing. You're just making marks. And the funny thing about these marks is if you put that sheet of paper that you made those marks on among 50 other people's sheets of paper of the same exercise, you'd be able to recognize your line. You know, in the end, your line is who you are.
Really? And that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's again like your handwriting, right? You can recognize your own handwriting, and you can also recognize handwriting of people in your family. That those lines that you're making, they somehow are who you are. They're an extension of who you are, because just like your walk is, like a lot of other things that are kind of unconscious, that's what it is. Now, what happens when you first start to draw? You're not being yourself. You're clamping up, right? You're very tense. You're very tight. You're not allowing yourself to flow. So as a result, your line doesn't really look like anything. And in fact, I noticed that most people who start out to do those first anxious drawings, they all kind of look alike. Each person, you know, all beginners drawings kind of have that same feeling. But then you loosen up and you start to express who you are, and that's very different.
That is something I had never thought about, but you're absolutely right. If, you know, just the four in my primary family, they all have very different ways of writing, and instantly, you know, you can see a note on the kitchen table and you know who it was from when I was growing up, and that is... and I think that's probably the beauty of what you're teaching, too, is that you're not teaching, in the end, your goal isn't to get somebody to look like another artist or another master, or you're not working towards something. You're just trying to bring out what's already in you. And I think that was what makes this approach that you have with all of your books really appealing to people. And I think that's something exceptional and something we forget a lot of. How much it takes to learn that, and that's a skill that you can. It just takes some investment and some practice. And one of the things in How to Draw Without Talent, and again, folks, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I'm Paula Granquist. We're talking with Danny Gregory, just a delightful artist and writer, and one of the people that inspires me the most, and one of my favorite guests from Art Zany Radio, is how to do that. And the thing that I didn't know before reading this book was the ABCs of drawing. And that was something that really, like a little light bulb went off in my head about, oh, that's part of what I need to know. So you want to give our listeners just a little introduction to what are the ABCs of drawing?
Yes, absolutely. So this is a concept that came from a really fantastic book called Drawing with Children by Mona Brooks. And I highly recommend it, even if you don't have children that you draw with. And drawing with children, by the way, is incredibly fun to do, and the book is really nice, too. But the concept that she explains in this book is that a lot of times you look at something that you want to draw, and you say, I don't know how to translate what I'm seeing into lines on the page, you know, because it's a three-dimensional object, and I don't know how to reproduce that, and what do I do? And it's similar, again, to having letters, having an alphabet. How do you break down words into lines on papers by turning them into letters? So she said that basically there are five elements that make up any drawing, and they are straight lines, curved lines, angled lines, and then two different kinds of shapes. So there's sort of roundish shapes that are colored in, and we'll call those dots. And then roundish shapes or organic shapes, outlines that are empty, and we'll call those circles. They're not really circles. Some of them are circles, but some of them are ovals, and some of them are kidney shapes, and some of them are football shapes. They're all different kinds of shapes. But basically, if you look at something and you say to yourself, I'm going to draw this thing in front of me, I'm going to start to break it down, and I'm going to look at this side of it. Is that side of it curved? Is it straight, or is it at an angle? And then I'm going to put that down. I'm going to put down that part of it. I'm going to just draw, okay, it's a line. And then it turns here at an angle. Okay, so now I'm going to draw an angle. And now it sweeps down the side, and it's a curve. So basically what you're doing is you're having an internal dialogue where you're saying, I'm going to look at this thing, and I'm going to break it down into its components, figure out what it is, and then I'm just going to record that observation on the paper. And that's really what a drawing is, seeing something, processing it, and turning it into lines on paper. So the alphabet, the ABCs, gives you the kind of tools to speak to yourself. Now, pretty quickly, you won't need those tools. Pretty quickly, you'll just work intuitively. Again, it's like writing. When you're a little kid, you first start to spell out words. You have to think about every letter, and you write down each letter. When you become an adult, you just, it all happens in a sort of seamless way, so you're not thinking about these things. But when you're just starting out, it's really great to be able to just analyze things in these terms. And you start to realize that basically everything is one of these five component parts. And if I think about it in those terms, record it in those terms, I'll start to have drawings that kind of look like what I'm looking at. And that gives you confidence. That makes it fun. That makes you want to do it more. All of which means that your drawings are going to be better. They're going to be the way that you want them to be.
Yeah, that was revolutionary for me. I had never seen that before. And that, in some way, that's very comforting that you can, and part of learning to draw is learning to see a little bit differently and taking your time to understand what you're seeing and maybe training your brain too. And so knowing that really I'm trying to look for what's a straight line, a curvy line, an angle, those roundish shapes and those that are filled in and the ones that are not, that are outlined. And that's, I can do that. That's only if, you know, like I can ask a question, you know, is it A, B, C, D, or E? And, then I can, you know, start to figure out how to, like you said, put that, what you're seeing on the page, which is part of the translation we're trying to work on and, process. Cause, you know, you think about all the things your mind is, the data points as you look at something they're trying to process, and drawing it isn't necessarily up there in the first, you know, four or five things that you think or your body needs to process. You know, survival would be pretty high up on the top. And so it's not a instant thing. You have to actually kind of practice seeing. And I think that's a really great way to start. I was fascinated by that. So thank you for including that in the book.
Yes. No, it's a great technique and a great tool. And it also points out that so much of what learning to draw is about is it really about unlearning things. Okay, so one of the things we need to unlearn is that art is just for professionals. Okay? But another thing we need to unlearn is a process that our brains use to deal with the complexity of reality. The world is filled with so much visual information. You know, we're constantly seeing so many things that are streaming into our eyeballs, and our brains can only process a very small amount of this, right? We can't constantly be understanding absolutely every aspect of everything we see. And so the way that we process things is we've reduced it to symbols, right? That's the code that we use to process things. So we look at something and we instantly know that's a tree.
Mm-hmm.
We instantly know that's a car, that's a person. But that isn't really helpful when you draw, because you don't want to draw symbols. Children draw symbols. Children draw, they have a symbol for drawing a house, right? It's a square with a triangle on top.
Right, and they all look very similar.
right. And so our symbol for drawing a person is, you know, a stick figure. But if I want to draw Brad Pitt, drawing a stick figure isn't going to really satisfy me. So I have to go beyond that symbol. And, you know, but symbols are comforting to us. I mean, it would be unmanageable if we constantly broke everything down into the alphabet of shapes when we were looking around us. If we were constantly processing. But when we stop to draw, that's what we're going to do, is we're going to say, okay, I have to get away from the symbols. I want to really draw that tree. And if I look at that tree, and I just see it in symbolic terms, I'll draw it like a stick with a circle on top. That'll be the tree. But what I want to do is I want to see the specifics of that tree. Like, what are the particularities of that tree? Okay, how many branches does it have? What is the light on it? What is the texture of it? How many leaves are there? I start to think about all those things, and it's a lot. I have to process all those things. I have to really observe them. And my drawing is going to be a record of all these observations that I'm having, right? So the more carefully I observe, the more information I'm extracting from the tree, the more detailed my drawing is going to be. And the slower that I do it, the more I look at the length of the lines, the sharpness of the angles, the curves, what exactly those curves are, the more I pay attention to that and, again, record that data on the page, the more my drawing is going to look like that particular tree, not just a generic tree, but that specific tree. And that will be the most pleasant drawing. That will be the drawing that gives me the most satisfaction. But another really important thing is happening while I'm doing this. I'm in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right here now. I'm really seeing the world around me. I'm not going, yep, tree, got it, moving on. I'm saying, let me commune with this tree. Let me really understand it. Let me see how is this tree grown? Where is it healthy? What shape is it? What are the exact colors? You know, what season is this exactly? What does this really mean? Can I feel that tree's spirit? All those kinds of things happen when I'm communing with it. So if I'm doing all that and I'm recording on paper, what's most important isn't that I finally end up with a great drawing of a tree. What's most important is that I have that experience, that moment, that process. That is the life-changing aspect of drawing, is being really present in the moment and not taking things for granted, but experiencing my life, the world around me, in its entirety, in its richness, in its beauty, and seeing the beauty of that tree for what it really is, as opposed to the symbols that we need to, as we rush through life, to process things.
Yeah, and that is why this book, I know you know this, and I think I'd like more people to know this, that, you know, you can do this no matter where you're beginning from, and that it will bring something back. It gives you something back if you engage with drawing and sketching as well, which is one of the components of the book that you talk about, which I found also helpful, is the difference between sketching and drawing. And I think sketching gives you, at least it made me feel like, okay, that's a little more accessible to me and a little more understandable in the expectation of what I'm going to produce. And so maybe have a minute or two to define that for us, because I think some people get really scared about wanting to make a drawing when really they could get the same joy from just a quick sketch.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the word sketch. Sketchy. I think of sketchy drawings as being kind of hastily done, but I think it's fine. I think it doesn't. That's just my personal aversion to the word. But I think I like drawing, because I think drawing, like, draws you out. It draws you out and it draws you in, right? It draws out who you are and it draws you into the subject that you're looking at. If you're sketching, a lot of times you kind of feel like, well, I'll just be really loose, you know, and you can. I mean, I think you can draw something that feels more sketchy by, you know, where you hold the pencil. Like, do you hold the pencil very loosely as opposed to, like, having a death grip on the end of the pencil? Those kinds of things are, you know, you might feel more comfortable with one form of it versus another, because I don't want you to be, you know, tight and clamped down while you're doing it. So sketching can just feel looser, but also if you feel like a sketch is less intimidating because it's more disposable somehow, or
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like, I'm not doing a drawing,
right,
framed, and, you know, that I need to share with people. And if for you the word sketch just means like, I just threw it off and tossed it off, great, then do it that way. You know, I think the main thing is, what is the sense, what is the feeling that it gives you? And if it gives you a feeling of freedom, and, you know, you don't feel hyper self-judgmental, you know, and you're just enjoying it and being in the moment, then great, then do it that way. And if you do it more often, then you might say, you know, I'm on a long bus ride and I've got like half an hour to sit on this bus. Let me do a more careful drawing of my shoe while I'm sitting here. Looking down at my shoe, I'm just going to draw, and I'm really going to notice, like, what exactly are the shoelaces doing as they go into the hole? Where does it twist around? Where do they cross over? Let me, again, maybe pull out the ABCs and say, like, what's the angle here? What's the length of that? And it's almost like doing a crossword puzzle or a jigsaw puzzle. You kind of break down the little pieces, and you look at this piece, and you draw the piece next to it, and then you draw the piece above it and the piece below it. And before long, you've drawn your whole shoe, and you've got a shoe that actually, wow, it almost looks like a photograph because I've paid so much attention to the details. Is that a sketch? Maybe. You could leave it on the bus and never look at it again. Or, you know, you could turn it into some giant oil painting. I don't know. But I think it's, again, the moment is as intense as you allow yourself to be. And that goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, that you enjoyed drawing when you were on vacation, but it's harder to get into that habit when you're living your real life.
Mm-hmm.
If you approach it with this kind of a feeling where you just say, you know what, I could look at Facebook right now, or I could instead take out a sketchbook from my bag and just spend 5 minutes drawing. I wrote a book called Art Before Breakfast because my thought was, I get up in the morning and I go into the kitchen and I put the kettle on to make a cup of tea, and I'm sort of standing around there for 5 minutes waiting for the kettle to boil. Maybe looking out the window, or maybe I'm glancing at the newspaper, and I thought, I could just do a drawing in that 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to draw my teacup, and I had this really beautiful teacup that had flowers painted on it, and I decided to keep a sketchbook next to the tea kettle in my kitchen with a pen clipped onto it. So I put the kettle on in the morning, I take out my sketchbook, I draw my cup, I draw the pattern, I draw the shadows. The kettle boils. I pour it in. I let the tea bag steep. I finish drawing the shading. I do the drawing. My tea is ready. I close the book, I put it next to the kettle again, I go off and have my cup of tea. And by doing that morning after morning after morning, drawing the same teacup in the same way for the same 5 minutes, my drawing really improved, but it was also a beautiful kind of like morning meditation that I was doing, you know, and so it's kind of like a win-win, you know, using that time in a nice way, starting my day in a nice way, having meditation, and also accumulating a sketchbook full of, albeit drawings of teacups, but it was a nice process.
Yeah, and that is something that I think is very doable. I pulled out my copy of Art Before Breakfast, and I've got like, you know, 10 or 15 little bookmarks and turned corners and pieces that, you know, because it does remind you that it doesn't take, you know, a lot of complexity. I think in early in How to Draw Without Talent, you just simply say, you know, you need yourself, something, a back of an envelope, a, you know, scratch of paper and a, you know, pen, and you're ready. So it's very accessible. And I think too that this book, you know, can benefit anybody who, whether you consider yourself an artist or you're just beginning again, like there's lessons to be learned and relearned, because we, you know, you'll never master it, I don't think.
No, I mean, I hope not, because then it would be kind of dull.
Yeah.
I think learning to draw is a life. I mean, I've been doing it for 20 years. There's so many things to learn. It's so interesting. I've drawn everything you can imagine. You know, there's just so many things to draw. You can draw buildings. You can draw animals. You can draw leaves. You can draw sandwiches. It's just endless. And there's all different kinds of techniques to learn. And there's other artists to look at. It's just an interesting kind of pastime. And it doesn't have to be about getting better. It doesn't have to be about some, you know, final product. Like that's another thing about sketches, is a lot of times people think, like, you have a sketchbook and you do little sketches and then you turn it into something. You know, one day I'm going to turn these sketches into a book, or I'm going to do a painting, or I'm going to do a mural, or I'm going to do a series of prints, whatever. But what if you say, no, I just like doing this. I'm just doing this thing. I can go for a jog without having to win the marathon. So just like take that part of it out of your life, you know? I mean, another thing we haven't really talked about, which is the title of this book, How to Draw Without Talent.
Sure, if you've got a minute.
I think that's such a big issue for people is, yeah, I have no talent. I mean, I hear that all the time. You know, people say, I'd love to draw, but I have no talent. And I think, I don't really have any talent. I don't really know what that even means.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you don't have any talent. So if talent is like this thing that you're given at birth, you know, you have this God-given talent. But what if you don't? Does that mean you should never do it? That would seem like a real shame. Like you really got gypped if you didn't get this. So let's pretend you don't have talent. Even if you do, let's just pretend you don't. And let's just dispense with that, because talent is sort of an excuse. Like, well, if you're talented, you just kind of pick up a pen and you can draw anything. It's amazing. I know a lot of people who I guess are really talented. They're professional artists. They work really hard at this, and they've worked at it for a really long time. They're always learning and they're always experimenting. It doesn't come easy necessarily to anybody. And it doesn't, why should it? You know, you can just still do it. So let's just dispense with talent. Let's just forget that as an excuse. And let's just say, let's just try it anyway. Try it regardless. And see what happens. I think you can still have fun. I think you can still surprise yourself with what you're capable of doing. And, you know, it does deepen your emotions, your understanding of the world, your ability to express yourself. And also, I find it makes me mentally healthier.
Mm-hmm.
It reduces my stress. It gives me, it makes me feel more alert. It's helped me to deal with very major traumatic events that I've had in my life. I began to draw when my wife had an accident that left her in a wheelchair. And it continued through all the different tribulations I've had. But it was really trauma that motivated me in the first place to look for something that had meaning and meditative kind of benefits. And this never stops. I still need that every day. I still need to have that kind of moment of calm and connection.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I think that's how we first met, was when you were talking about A Kiss Before You Go. And that was, And what I love about your books, I find them very inspiring, and that story in particular was very appealing to me because it's a way I'd never had anybody talk about processing grief or tragedy or, you know, trauma in your life, and it still sticks with me today. And I love that in my little office I have your books, and you know, some of that one is in the grief section, and then I've got some in the creativity section and some in the drawing section. And you know, you've done so many things, and you know, we've only talked about this part of your life. You're also a blogger and a filmmaker and a speaker and a podcaster and all kinds of things. So you've really embraced this life, and I think the best thing is that you're sharing it with everybody, and you're willing to keep showing people the way to begin. And that's a gift that not a lot of people have, and it's something I would imagine that you also learn. And this book, How to Draw Without Talent, is dedicated to those students of Sketchbook School. And I'd love to share with our listeners how they can access Sketchbook School and a little bit about how it works.
So Sketchbook School is an online art school. But when I say art school,
right,
it's none of the heaviness that you might associate with being an artist. It's really a joyful thing, and it's an opportunity to kind of dive into the experience of making art, and it's designed for people at all levels. So if you've never drawn before, that's fine. In fact, I have a course called How to Draw Without Talent for people who literally have never drawn before. But also, if you're interested in learning about watercoloring or drawing with colored pencils or how to draw people, or we have a new class that's about mixed media journaling, which is really nice and calming and meditative and fun to play around with art supplies. And what we do is I have a lot of friends who are artists, and I go to them and I say, I want you to teach people what you do and explain what it's like to make the art that you make. So I go to their studios and I make films with them about their lives, about how do they become an artist, about what are their favorite things that they've learned. We look at their studio, we look at their art, we go through their sketchbooks. They talk about their favorite art supplies. I love this pen, I love that brush. And then we sit down and do a drawing or make a painting or do several different pieces of art. And they explain what they're doing, how they're doing it, and why they're doing it. And then they invite you to make something of your own based on what you've learned from them. And so if you take a class, say a 4-week class or a 6-week class, each week will be a different artist. We'll go to a different artist studio and have that experience. And we also have a community that has developed around our classes. About 50,000 people have taken these classes. So a lot of them are part of a community. We have our own platform. It's called the Schoolyard. And you get to go there and share the art that you're making in response to the videos that you've watched. And you upload it if you want to. And you get to see what other people have also made in response to the same experience, and you talk about it. And you can also talk about other things that are going on in your art-making life, problems that you're having, exciting things that you've discovered, or also other parts of your life. People have talked about so many things as they've spent years in this community. They share all different aspects of their lives, and then they'll also get together. We have drawing get-togethers where you might go out and draw buildings in a particular city. Last year we had our first convention. Mm-hmm. About 500 people came to Pasadena outside of Los Angeles, and we spent 4 or 5 days together drawing and sharing sketchbooks and having glasses of wine and singing songs and just being together and sharing our art life, and that's something that we're going to be doing every year. So it's kind of gone from people taking an online class to a real community of people who love to make art together, and they're almost all not professional artists. Some of them have become professional artists as a result of doing this, but by and large, their desire is the same thing I've described that is my desire, which is just make art making a regular part of your life, a fun thing to do, and, you know, it's a way of connecting with the world. It's not about necessarily becoming a professional illustrator or painter, but you can.
That is such a beautiful story, and I'm sure you never imagined when you started that that is the place it would take you, but it feels like it's exactly where you're supposed to be, and I bet there's a lot of joy that comes from being in that community, and it's always easier to do something that makes you a little nervous when you've got other people who are right there with you doing the same thing.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, what we found is that it's more important, really, to have other people like you around you doing this than it is to have a teacher who tells you exactly how to do it. It's better to say, I struggled with this, and have somebody else say, I struggled with it too, but I love what you did with this and that. So that's part of the experience, is just being with others of like mind.
Well, it has been such a pleasure, and I just thank you so much for sharing all of these things with us so that everybody can, I'm a huge advocate of accessing your imagination every day, and this is a great way to do it that's very inspiring. And I think I think you can safely say it's going to bring some joy and some unexpected pleasures to your life, but you just have to start, and this is a great place to begin. So thank you for everything.
Thank you. Thank you so much also for encouraging as many people as you do with your show. I think I love talking to you, and I'm going to have to go off and write another book so I can come back and talk to you again.
I hope so. I think that would be a wonderful thing. It's my great pleasure. Happy drawing, happy sketching, happy journaling, and I hope maybe I'll even see you on Sketchbook School someday.
Anytime.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that was Danny Gregory, and this is Art Zany Radio. I'm just so excited. I adore Danny Gregory, and I'm often inspired, so I hope that you have been inspired as well. Just got a couple things on the list. Northfield Youth Choirs has the Winter Concert of the Stars Saturday, December 14th at 3 o'clock, so I hope that that's at the Skinner Memorial Chapel. Their drawing on their poster is a child in a blue bedroom. The concert is of the stars, and it's stars everywhere. That is an inspiration. So I'm just going to give you that quick piece. You've been listening to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. Please remember to add some Art Zany to your life. And as always, keep thinking of your imagination and enjoying that gift of imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
I'm afraid since Dad passed, the house has become